Chapter 9. Learning New Things. How to use what you've learned. Learning something isn't always the easiest of tasks. It may seem simple, but it's not easy. There's always so much to do, so much to read, and so much to learn. Where do you start? This is almost always determined by your personal interests. Naturally, it's easier to devote more time to what you're curious about and what you're interested in. Nothing strange there. For me, it was hearing Skura's assessment of people, his thesis on all the idiots at the start of this book, that became the impetus for me to learn about people and how we relate to one another. But it's taken me many years to acquire this knowledge. I've read books, attended training, and been certified many times in different subjects. Furthermore, I've led thousands of courses on the subject. So now, as a middle-aged man, I believe I have a decent grasp on how people function. But, in all probability, I've only scratched the surface. If we had endless time, there'd be no problem. All of this learning has taken time. Maybe I don't have the natural instinct that many others have. I don't really know. But I do know a bit about teaching methods and how we learn new things. And for me, it's difficult to think of any subject more important than people. No matter what job you have, where life may take you, you're going to meet other people. For example, you can be an employee with work colleagues, a seller with customers, a project manager who leads people with different expertise than your own, a managing director with employees, a middle manager with people both above and below you in the organisation, a self-employed entrepreneur finding your own sales and orders, a parent with teenagers in the household, a spouse, a coach for the football team, a chairperson of the local home and school associations. There's no limitation to how this knowledge can be applied. Understanding people will always remain a crucial factor in achieving your goals in life as smoothly as possible, no matter what these goals are. We transform theoretical knowledge into real competence, both actively and passively. The passive category involves verbal receiving, that is, reading or hearing words, and visual receiving, that is, watching a movie or watching a demonstration. The active category involves receiving and participating, that is, giving a talk or participating in a discussion, and doing, that is, doing a dramatic presentation or simulating the real experience. Listening to a book is one thing. I'm glad that you're listening to this one. It's a great way to kick off your own learning, but it's only the first step in learning something. A new approach. My mission is clear. I want more people to understand this method of classifying behaviour. So much conflict could be avoided if we just understood why the people around us behave the way they do. I have nothing against conflict. It usually doesn't bother me, because I know how to handle it. But when people tear down and destroy more than they build up, I believe that we should be able to find other ways forward. Life consists of so much more than learning from your mistakes. Some mistakes you can avoid altogether. A language like any other language. The language this book discusses, DISA language, IPD, the Institute for Personal Development, which is its official name, works like any other language when it comes to learning. If you've ever studied Spanish or German in school, then you know what I'm talking about. To study for your exams is one thing. To be able to really speak fluently is a different matter. It's not enough to refresh your knowledge once a year just before a trip to Spain. If you really want to be able to speak Spanish, more than just ordering food at a restaurant, whenever you run into a Spanish speaker, you need to practice. It's a perishable commodity. There are no shortcuts. Of course, after listening to this book, you can go out into the world and happily experiment with the people you meet. I advise you to do so. In the beginning, the challenge will be that you're going to guess incorrectly about people's personalities, and that may result in a certain degree of embarrassment. But as you become more fluent in the language of behaviour, it will transform how you interact with the people around you. Chapter 10. Body language. Why how you move matters. How do you really look? Introduction. Different colours exhibit different types of body language. In addition to all things you say and do, you project a certain type of body language to the people around you. People pick up on this body language and use it to interpret your mood. So let's take a closer look at how we move. Body language refers to all forms of non-verbal communication, conscious as well as unconscious. Differences in body language vary, both between individuals and between different groups of people. Our body language also functions as a social and cultural marker, even if there are common biological foundations. The modern English language contains about 170,000 words, of which 5,000 are used regularly. In comparison, according to certain scholars, body language contains almost 700,000 signals. Yes, we can debate the exact numbers, but that's not the point. Just understand that there are an immense number of signals, more than we may be aware of. I'm not going to examine all these signals, but it's still interesting to see what the differences are between different behaviour profiles. Just remember, our state of mind, situation, and whether we feel safe or unsafe can have a crucial influence on our body language. Posture. If on the one hand you have a relaxed, natural but not slack posture, other people often get the impression that you're self-confident. If on the other hand you have a shrunken posture, it can be interpreted as resignation and disappointment. If you have an erect, somewhat wooden posture, people can believe that this is a signal of dominance. In other words, you demand respect from those around you. However, it could also be an indication that you were trained at a military academy. Gaze. We use our eyes for many different things. Shifty eyes generally suggest that the person in question would rather be somewhere else. Other people meet your gaze steadily, without even blinking. This creates a totally different impression. It's said that liars can't look you in the eye, and they often shift their gaze to the side. But since this is commonly known even among liars, the worst of them have learned to stare you straight in the eyes when they're lying. So nothing is that obvious. Someone who is repeatedly touching his neck is more often an indication of a liar. When something is awful or unpleasant, many lift their hands up to their faces. And when you need to think, you often close your eyes for a while. Head and face. When speaking, we usually either nod or shake our heads, depending on whether we agree or not. When we listen extra carefully to a discussion, we can lean our heads to one side. Hanging your head or wrinkling your forehead can signal sadness or depression. When we're amazed at something, we often raise our eyebrows, while we turn up our noses at things we aren't fond of. In your face alone, 43 different muscles are concealed, and these can be combined in countless ways. Hands. Yes, this is a true classic. When greeting a person, how hard do you really have to shake his hand? A simple handshake can reveal a lot about a person. Limp and feeble handshakes often indicate a submissive behaviour. So if you have such a handshake, it might be a good idea to press a little harder. If a handshake is firm, it probably suggests that a person is determined. Anyone who squeezes way too hard belongs more than likely to the former category, but would prefer to belong to the latter. Clenched fists rarely mean good news, usually indicating aggressiveness. Certain nervous people pick at their clothes, removing hairs or threads. This often indicates they would rather focus their attention on other things. Holding your hands clasped behind your back often expresses power and security. Remember what I just said about lies? A more effective way to spot a liar is to notice if he puts the palm of his hand on his chest, preferably his right hand over his heart, and sighs indignantly when he's been accused of lying. Would I lie? How can you say that about me? This gesture is intended to strengthen his honest intentions, but it immediately puts those around on their guard, because it's so unnecessary and excessive. There's definitely something fishy going on there. Territory. It's very important that all people have their own personal space, as everyone needs an area that is his own. Among other things, this territory can be the distance you maintain from people when you're speaking to them. The personal zone is generally a few feet, and the social zone is 3 to 10 feet. When we speak about the personal zone, we mean the space when two people who know each other are communicating. The social zone refers to the space between strangers who are communicating. But this is very much dependent on the culture of the speakers. In the Nordic European region, for example, the personal zone is definitely larger than what someone from the Mediterranean would have. So what do we do about all this? How do the various forms of behaviour differ from one another? It's obvious that some well-known facts about body language don't apply to every single person. Someone who is busily picking lint off his sleeve might be bored, or he might just be nervous. Another example is how people deal with uncertainty. A green who is unsure leans backwards. A red who is unsure leans forward, as his way of dealing with this uncertainty is to try to dominate the conversation. On the following pages, I've listed further examples of the differences. Try observing people in real life to see if you can find any of the following forms of behaviour. But remember, body language is very individual. Sure, there are general expressions that apply throughout the entire world and among all people. A contemptuous stare, for example, looks similar in every country. But there are so many differences that you'll have to study your fellow mortals to sharpen your ability. The following short sections are intended to serve as a simple guide. Red body language. Some basics to keep in mind about reds. They keep their distance from others. Have powerful handshakes. Lean forward aggressively. Use direct eye contact. Use controlling gestures. As I mentioned previously, reds often have a clear and distinctive body language. You can usually recognize a red from a distance. When you walk through large crowds, you'll see people swarming around, standing still, conversing with others, or just checking to see what the fuss is all about. Let's say that you're looking at a town square teeming with people. If you look really closely, you will see a person who's crossing the square at a brisk pace, completely disregarding the people standing in his way. With his gaze fixed on a point a bit in front of him, the red speeds up and crosses the square without any problem. He does not give way, but makes others move aside. His steps are decisive and powerful. He expects the rest of us to get out of his way. The first time you meet a red, he usually maintains a certain distance. His handshake won't be hearty, but it will be powerful. Expect that the red, man or woman, will grip a little bit harder to show who's in charge. Some people consider this alpha male behaviour, but it also occurs in women. A red has a need to demonstrate that he is someone to be reckoned with. Forget over-exuberant smiles. His face can be downright grim, especially if you're attending a business meeting. But even in social settings, reds maintain some reserve. A red won't give you a big bear hug. As long as he's sober, under the influence of alcohol, anything can happen. When things start getting tense, which usually happens rather quickly when reds are involved, this guy will lean across the table and argue his case quite forcefully. Eye contact will be very direct, his gaze fixed on you. When it comes to the language of power, reds have their finger on the trigger right from the start. Be prepared for that. Also, be prepared for a relatively limited use of gestures. But those gestures that do surface can be controlling and aggressive. Reds point at people very readily. The notion that it's rude to point at people isn't something that particularly worries him. It's also common that reds point at you by stretching out their hand towards you with the palm facing down. If you want to give this a try, ask someone to point at you that way and then think about how it feels. You can also see that reds, of course they're not alone in this, are more than willing to interrupt you. They draw their breath continuously, hoping to find gaps in the conversation. If they have to wait too long to speak, they'll throw themselves into the conversation with a loud voice and simply take over. Voice. What about a red's tone of voice? It's often strong. We hear these people clearly because they think nothing of raising their voices to make themselves heard, as much as it takes. Of course, even reds can be nervous and worried about things, but usually you won't hear this. Their voices won't tremble that much. This is one of the secrets reds have. No matter what's happening behind the facade, reds will sound convincing. No stammer, no hesitation, finger on the trigger. If we don't listen, they will repeat it one more time, but louder. In the end, they always get through. Speed in speech and deed. As I mentioned earlier, reds are always in a hurry. Quick equals good. Normally, this applies to speech and actions. Everything happens at a furious pace. Because speed is the factor many reds measure success by, it will be all go. And a couple of sharp changes when the course needs adjusting. Yellow body language. Some simple basics to keep in mind about yellows. They are tactile, are relaxed and jocular, show friendly eye contact, use expressive gestures, often come close. A yellow's body language is often very open and inviting. Smiles appear constantly, even when there's not much to smile about. They joke around a lot and can be very relaxed. When visiting a neighbour he doesn't know that well, a yellow may just stretch out on the sofa. But this is typical of the yellows. When a yellow feels secure in any given situation, you can see it. He's like an open book. The similarity with red behaviour lies primarily in the tempo. Yellows move quickly and quite distinctively. They often radiate a strong self-confidence. Personal space is a relative thing for yellows. While some colours don't like having people sit too close to them, yellows will willingly move up very close. Yellows can spontaneously start hugging everyone around them. Man or woman, it doesn't really matter. It depends on what the feeling and the mood are that day. It's not uncommon for others to recoil when this happens, which yellows find very trying. But it's not just that yellows like hugging. It can also be a simple form of physical contact. A hand placed on an arm, a pat on the leg, with no ulterior motive. The yellow just wants to reinforce what he's said. What a yellow perceives as something natural and spontaneous, others can perceive as an invitation. And of course, it can end badly. In general, with yellows there will be jokes all round and countless smiles. Eye contact is no problem. It's intense, cheerful, and friendly. Voice. A yellow's tone of voice denotes a strong commitment from start to finish. You hear it from afar. Laughter, fun, intensity, enthusiasm, joy, energy. Generally speaking, yellows show empathy very clearly. They're with you either 100% or not at all. And this can be heard in their voice. It goes up and down. It changes tempo, vigour, and intensity. Yellows often have a powerful melody in their way of speaking. No matter what emotion has seized the yellow at the moment, it will be noticeable in his voice. Speed in speech and deed. Tempo. Not quite the same rate of action as reds, but a decidedly fast pace. Have you met anyone who, when in a hurry to say something, kind of stumbles over his words? Only half of them really come out as they should. You can surmise what is being said, but sometimes it's incomprehensible. These are yellows whose mouth simply cannot keep up with everything they have to say. Green body language. Some simple basics to keep in mind about greens. They are relaxed and come close. Act methodically. Tend to lean backwards. Use very friendly eye contact. Prefer small-scale gestures. Greens are often, but not always, sluggish in body movement. When they're completely harmonious, they have a relaxed body language that exudes calm and confidence. No impetuous movements. No sudden tossing of their heads or hands. Nice and easy. Their gestures are often less flamboyant and well-suited for smaller groups. Greens don't feel at ease in larger groups, so they become more closed and will appear reserved. Greens often have body language that gives them away. They try to hide their true feelings, but don't always succeed. If they're out of balance or feel uncomfortable, it will be visible. When sitting around a table, you can expect that greens will tend to lean backwards. This is something of a paradox, as they don't really have a problem getting close to people. Just like yellows, they like to touch others. It's fine as long as they know the person they are touching. Beware, however, of touching a green who hasn't given a clear sign that he knows you well enough. It's easy to cross the line. They can be protective of their personal space. You often notice when a red walks into a room. Since greens are the complete opposite of reds in many things, I can say that greens make discretion a point of honour. It's not uncommon that they try to make themselves invisible. The reason? They don't want to be the centre of attention. Greens almost always have friendly faces. If not, then they're quite neutral. Don't expect any exaggerated smiles or over-exuberant greetings. A little expectant, that's it. But the difference will be huge if a green knows you. If he thinks that you're good friends, he can be very intimate and friendly. If he feels that you've just met each other, well then, you just have to wait. Let greens come to you. Do not force yourself on them. In time, when they trust you, they'll relax and become more natural. Voice. A green's voice will never be strong. It's not likely that he will drown out the group. You'll have to make a little bit more effort. Even when greens speak in front of a larger group, they may do this if they don't have any choice. They'll speak as if there were only three of you sitting around the table. Sometimes it may appear that greens don't see the other 100 people in the room. The volume is generally low, and it can be difficult to hear what they say. But their voice will always be soft and radiate warmth. The pace will be slower, and the variation not at all like when a yellow speaks. Speed in speech and deed. Generally, greens have a slower pace than reds and yellows, but not quite as slow as blues. Speed has no value in itself. If a heightened tempo risks destroying the cooperation in the group, greens will reduce the speed. It doesn't matter what the deadline is. The most important thing is always going to be how people feel. Blue body language. Some simple basics to keep in mind about blues. They prefer to keep others at a distance. Either stand or sit. Often have closed body language. Use direct eye contact. Speak without gestures. The easiest way to describe a blue's body language is to say that he has none. Okay, maybe that's a bit simplistic. What I mean is that there's not that much to interpret in a blue. Neither his face nor his body gives much away. When I speak about body language to salespeople, they usually remark that some people are impossible to interpret. When I ask if these are people who sit almost perfectly still, without moving even a muscle in their faces, they usually nod and think this is remarkable. They're probably talking about blues. A person who doesn't exhibit much movement or even temperament reveals nothing. In this case, it's the lack of distinctive body language that tells us what we need to know. Many blues can make very dramatic statements with an expressionless face. I once heard a blue manager say that the department was to close and that we had to agree on a decommissioning plan for 300 employees. Not a muscle in his face moved unnecessarily. This is what gives people the idea that blues lack feelings. But this is, naturally, not true. Let me remind you again that a blue is an introvert, which is to say, many of his emotions simply operate beneath the surface. It also works the other way. Once, many years ago, I saw a lady win $500,000 on television. Behind the camera, her husband was heard screaming for joy, while the lady herself sat very still with a cool smile. The host smiled and waved his arms around, and for a while you had to wonder who had actually won. But the lady herself said nothing more than, "Thank you, this was nice." She hardly moved at all. I don't think it's because she was already a millionaire. It was because she was a blue. This is simply the way it works. Beneath the surface, I assume that she was delighted with her winnings, but she didn't show it outwardly. One day, I will call the channel and ask if they still have the recording, because it's such a vivid illustration. When you see blues speaking in front of larger groups, this tendency becomes very evident. Just like greens, they have no need to be the centre of attention. The difference, however, is that while a green would like to sink through the floor, a blue will remain standing. He'll try to whip up the masses while standing completely motionless with a fixed face. Another clue is that blues require a relatively large amount of personal space around them. They often feel more comfortable by keeping others at a distance. Naturally, it depends on how well they know each other. But this zone is significantly larger than it is for yellows, for instance. If others come too close, blues' body language becomes closed. Both arms and legs will be crossed, indicating that they're keeping their distance. As I mentioned earlier, blues move less than others. When they stand still. There's not that much swaying and walking. They can very easily stand in the same spot for a whole hour while giving a lecture. When they sit down, they remain seated more or less in the same position all the time. Consequently, they won't use too many gestures. Imagine a yellow, a really outgoing and dynamic figure. And now think the opposite. Take away all movements that aren't needed, most of them according to blues, and you begin to get the picture. Stone-faced, as someone once described it. However, blues normally look others straight in the eyes. They have no problem with eye contact, even if it makes others uncomfortable. Voice. Though not exactly weak, a blue's voice is restrained and subdued. They don't make much of a fuss about themselves. Their impression tends to be controlled. It's common for them to sound very pensive, as if weighing every word before it's allowed to see the light of day. Generally, there's little or no variation in a blue's voice. He sounds more or less the same all the time, whether he's reading the TV guide or giving his acceptance speech to the nation after winning the presidential election. Without much rhythm or melody, he just continues to say what's on the script. Musicians tend to have difficulty with this. They think everything a blues says flows badly. Speed in speech and deed. Slow. At least if we compare it to others. If we take a red or even a yellow, he'll speak at the speed of sound. A blue has a completely different pace. It will take as long as it takes. Speed is of no interest. Chapter 11. A real-life example. The company party. How to understand everyone you meet. Many years ago, I used to work in the banking sector. It was an interesting job in many ways, though it could be a little humdrum at times. However, I learned a lot by meeting many different types of people, and I have many stories of funny customer meetings from that period. The most interesting insights, however, I gained behind the scenes. One of the more startling experiences was at a branch where I was working in the 1990s. A series of behaviour stereotypes were working there. Some of them were obvious in their behavioural profiles. We had incredibly distinctive blues, and equally obvious greens and yellows. And, of course, a red boss. One spring, we'd been working incredibly hard. Many had been out sick, and we were under pressure from customers. People were tired, irritated, and touchy. We really needed some good news. The person who got fed up with all the hard work first was one of the yellow advisors. One day, she came into the lunchroom and said that she'd had enough of all our grumpy faces. We needed something fun to do, and she knew exactly what. It was time to find a goal, something to look forward to. A company party would save the day. Full of enthusiasm, she told us that she'd seen a very nice conference centre nearby where all of us could go for a weekend to have a good rest. They had a stunning spa and gym, snazzy hotel rooms, and a trendy restaurant that was truly à la mode. In addition, she knew the owner through a friend of a friend and could probably get a bargain price on the whole package. She just wanted to know what we thought about the idea. At first, we all stared at her, not knowing if the whole thing was for real, because we suspected that she probably didn't know the owner at all. With a broad smile, she continued to speak, talking about all the fun we could have. We could play games, organise some friendly competitions, enjoy bubble baths, and, of course, have a monster party in the evening. A lively discussion began, and several of us thought the idea sounded great. The red bank director looked around and saw that his employees liked the idea. Thankfully, he was keen on the idea. We were tired and worn out, and he wanted to show his appreciation for our commitment. He made the decision right there and then. After a 5-minute discussion, he declared that there would be a party, and he promised to foot the bill. He looked at the yellow woman who had suggested the party and asked if she was prepared to organise everything, make the necessary calls and book everything. She immediately began to deliver a long harangue that was nothing more than one big smokescreen to hide the fact that she thought she'd done her bit by coming up with the idea. The red boss silenced her with a wave of his hand. A few green colleagues were sitting behind him on a corner of the sofa, the same corner where they always sat. The boss didn't even need to turn around to be able to call them by name. He asked each of them if they would help. They all agreed, without really knowing what he'd asked. The red boss nodded briefly and left the room. He was done. As he stood up, he forgot about the matter immediately. Excitement burst forth, and everyone with red and yellow in their behaviour profiles began exclaiming about the party, all talking at the same time. The yellow advisor was extremely enthusiastic and continued to sell the idea, despite the fact that the decision had already been made. Her proposals for the type of party we should have became wilder and wilder. I remember that she started with a black tie ball and had come all the way to a toga party before someone managed to silence her. However, one person sat silently in the corner. Our blue credit manager was very concerned. When everything calmed down a bit, he said with a loud voice, "But how are we supposed to get there?" The only thing he had heard about the whole affair was that the conference centre was 20 miles outside of town. And now the problems were stacking up. We were faced with a significant logistical challenge. Should we go by car or taxi? Or had the bank planned to charter a bus? How would this actually be done? Endless obstacles were lining up. He crossed his arms and clenched his teeth. The yellow woman erupted and tore into him right away. How could he be so negative? Here she was, after coming with the best idea in the world, and he immediately spoiled the whole thing with umpteen trying questions. Maybe he should come up with his own ideas for once. How did he think we should get there? He didn't have an answer. He just pointed out that there were lots of options. He couldn't make any decision or have an opinion. He only knew that the whole idea was poorly thought out. The Greens saved the day by saying that they were willing to take their cars and pick everyone up. Five cars should be enough, and they promised to arrange everything. This announcement calmed the discussion down a little, and the yellow woman could feel like a winner again. Her party had just been saved. Everyone looked forward to the party, but the yellow advisor never showed up. She had accidentally double-booked that day. There must have been a wedding on that same weekend, or maybe a relative was turning 50. As a matter of fact, it might have been both. What happens at a company party when no one is paying attention? Once the party started, exciting things happened. We all know that alcohol affects people. We also know that different people are affected in different ways. Nothing strange so far. If we ignore for a moment that the amount of alcohol consumed is an important factor, and assume that we're just talking about moderate drinking, and that no one will drive their cars that night, we can see some interesting patterns. We had several yellows at our branch. The four sellers who dealt with private customers were very yellow. They were jovial, positive entertainers right from the outset. They needed no alcohol before daring to loosen up and become approachable. In fact, you could easily get the impression that they always were a bit tipsy because they had that frolicsome energy. They saw life as one long celebration that should always be funny and amusing. But the interesting thing is that yellows who drink can lose some of this. During the company party, I observed that three of the four yellow salespeople became more and more silent as the evening went on. As the intake of certain beverages increased and the atmosphere became more intense, they withdrew. I remember one of the guys sat down on the steps outside with a wine glass in his hand. I asked him what was the matter. He was moody and philosophical. What was the point of it all? Why did he go the extra mile? No one ever really thanked him for it. Perhaps the best thing to do was to resign. My cheerful colleague had been transformed into a brooding pessimist. Funnily enough, I found the blue credit manager inside the party venue dancing on the table while telling dirty jokes. Never before nor since have I heard such dirty jokes. When I asked his colleagues what he'd been drinking, they shrugged their shoulders and said that he always behaved like that when he got started. If I'd met him for the first time that night, I would have thought that he was one of the yellows at our workplace. It was as if yellows and the blues had completely switched personalities. You could conclude that a really good party consists of sober yellows and blues who are slightly under the influence. However, things became really interesting when I found our red bank director, who normally was quite stern. He had a glass of whiskey in his hand and was standing there speaking to the green group of administrators. He explained, a little ambiguously, I hasten to add, that he really wasn't a horrible person and that he liked them very much. When he lost his temper at the office, they shouldn't take it personally. He meant no offence, and they didn't need to be afraid of him. The six Greens, two men and four women, who'd been drinking as well, all spoke up and gave him a piece of their minds. They were irritated by his behaviour and explained that he was the worst boss they'd ever had. Each of them had been working in the office for at least 20 years, and when he was gone, they would still be there. And what did he think about that? They backed him into a corner and gave him a proper dressing down. The red boss fled the field and was the first to leave the party. Even the reds and the greens had changed behaviour with each other in some strange way. I left the party with an extraordinary insight. Alcohol changes people, but exactly how they change is even more interesting. However, back in the office on Monday, everything was back to normal. The yellows told their latest jokes, and the blue guy did not say a word. The boss glowered at everyone, and the greens just stared at the wall when he showed up. Order was restored. Again, I cannot prove this, so you simply have to do your own research. Challenge your pals late on a Friday night, and you'll understand exactly what I mean. Just take it easy with the alcohol.